All right, thank you. I'm excited to be here and provide some interesting discussion centered around genetics and race and place. When we think about disparities, I think there's a pretty consistent consensus around the issue of causes of health disparities, and most of us understand that the social, behavioral, political sort of variables and risk factors are those that are the major contributors to health disparities, and genetics, in a sense, contributing little. But I think we still need to understand that genetics, for many of these complex common diseases, genetics does play a role. It may not necessarily account for the disparity that we see across many of these diseases, but it does play a role and could be an interesting, identifiable sort of potential target in terms of therapeutics if you understand the genetics. So what I wanted to do today is just go over a bit about the genetics and place genetics and race into context as we go further into these discussions this morning. And so, you know, what we know about genetics has really been based on the fruits of the International Human Genome Project, where scientists were involved in sequencing the human genome, where we identified that there were 3.5 billion of these nucleotides, these chemical bases that are embedded in these chromosomes that we have in every cell of our body. And 50% of our DNA, our genome, comes from our mother, the other 50% from our father. But if we compare any two sort of sequences from folks in the room, in terms of your DNA, if we look at your profiles, there'll be some differences. And these differences is a class of differences that we call SNPs, or single nucleotide polymorphisms. In fact, there's over 50, 60, a million of them that we've cataloged thus far. Many of them are rare and found only in one family or one individual, but some of them are quite common, shared across communities and ethnicities, countries, continents. And so this is a very interesting Venn diagram that I like to show, where we sort of show the distribution of genetic variants, these single nucleotide polymorphisms, across human populations. And African populations have a lot more variation than non-African populations because of humanity starting in Africa. African populations be a lot larger historically than other populations, and so we see a lot more variation in Africa than we do in Europe and Asia. Those populations actually coming from African populations during the Great Migration out of Africa over 80,000 years ago, in the early history of modern humans. What is the big take-home point here is that half of that variation that's in Africa, if you look at that Venn diagram, half of that variation in Africa, 103 out of 199, is exclusive just to Africa, not found in Europe or Asia. Only 10% of that variation in Europe and Asia is exclusive to those continents. That means something for geneticists when we think about risk for disease and drug response. African variation is important, and it's a big part of the key when we talk about human population history and human population variation. We know that some of these polymorphisms actually do impact disease. Think about sickle cell, where we actually know the actual mutations and polymorphisms that contribute to different forms of sickle cell disease. Other forms of cancer, like breast cancer and some forms of colon cancer, we know the actual polymorphisms that are involved. But you know, it's fascinating now because we're moving more now into how genes and the environment interact. And this is where there's going to have a lot of public health implications, because some of these common variants behave differently in different environments. And so the challenge has been to not only catalog the variants, but also how they interact across different environments. We call this epigenetics, how the environment impacts genetic expression. And it plays through issues of DNA methylation and what we call histone modification. And some of this is actually changes we see from in utero all the way into adulthood through development. Some of these are impacted by environmental chemicals and pollution, drugs, of course, aging, and diet. But this is important because more and more we're hearing about precision medicine and the impact of genetics on health. And we call this precision health. And it's actually more and more involved in clinical practice, from diagnostics, pharmacogenetics, clinical trials, risk assessment, and the development of new drugs in biology. What is the main point here in terms of precision medicine is to be able to intervene in this disease process. As you see this red line, we want to be able to intervene a lot earlier. Clinicians want that information so that they can make a decision earlier, because we know that the later you intervene in diseases, the poorer the outcome. So the earlier the intervention, the earlier the acknowledgement that there's a problem and there's potential prognostic sort of markers that we could use to have a better diagnosis and better outcomes, we want to be able to do that. And so genetics is strongly seen as a factor in trying to understand better this disease process. So we want to be able to intervene earlier at baseline risk, initiating events and risk assessments, and be able to predict and diagnose earlier. Now, why should we care? Because precision medicine is actually upon us right now. This era of precision medicine is here. There are genetic tests that are currently available, but the bulk of them, when I say the bulk, I mean 98% of the genetic tests that are available now. You can go to certain clinics or hospitals and have some of these tests done for cardiomyopathies or some cancer risk. Most of these are based on information that was gathered through European descent populations. Very little information on African and Hispanic and populations of colors. But so in a sense, precision medicine may actually increase health disparities. And this is something that I've been really trying to not only understand, but discuss more and more, is that because of the fact that the bulk of biomedical research has been focused on whites, in particular white men, most of the information that is used in this knowledge base of precision medicine is based on populations of European ancestry. And so when we think about disparities, and we use race as a means to measure these disparities, we're going to have some problems. Race is a crude proxy. I've said this many times. What is it a crude proxy for? For some shared biology, some shared environment. When we're trying to understand complex disease, we need to tease apart those confounding factors. We need to understand if biology is playing a role, if the environment is playing a role, if there's this interesting interaction. And the only way you can do that is if you move away from just saying African American as a risk factor, or blacks or Negroes or whatever as a risk factor. We need to understand the genetics, the genetic background, and measure better the environment, be it diet, lifestyle, and SES. When we think about ancestry and disparities, we can actually use genetic ancestry to tease apart and deconstruct race in these study designs to understand what is the contributing factor to these disparities. And we've been doing this more and more across different diseases and also for drug response. What do we know about ancestry and disparities? We know communities of color, African-Americans, Hispanics, highly admixed. We can use genetic markers to tease apart that ancestry to really go beyond this black-white, which historically in this country, what the country has been predicated on. It's really mainly black and white, and based on slavery and segregation. We continue to use that as a model to operate. And so we know, when we think about it, our family histories are very mixed. We have a conglomerate of ancestries, diverse ancestries. So there is no sort of 100% pure Mandingo, no matter how much I think I am. You know, I'm a mixture, yeah, and you too. Not only African Americans, but Hispanics too have this rich genetic background. And we think about Puerto Ricans having a higher proportion of African, West African ancestry. We look at Mexican Americans, a much less African, a lot more Native American ancestry. But NIH and other federal entities pool them all together as one sort of racial ethnic group, when in fact they're very diverse in sort of genetic background. This is important when one is trying to understand issues like drugs to treat asthma, where we know that there are potential targets that vary, proteins and transporters and receptors that vary across ethnicity and genetic background. So this is funny. This is actually my genetic painting, my genome painting. And you'll notice that I have a mixture of European, Native American, and the bulk of my genome is at West African. But if you look at chromosome 15, it's all African, right? So if we look at most African Americans, we see this mosaic of these chromosomes of different proportions of African, Native American, European ancestry. And then some are wondering what genes are on chromosome 15. It's not genes for alcoholism or nothing like that. Actually, I have the important gene, the big predictors for skin color on chromosome 15, the two big genes for skin color, which is why I have the African alleles, even though I have 12% European ancestry. Some may say, that's a dark skin, a white boy, you know. That's because of my African alleles there on chromosome 15. So anyway, we can look at it at that level of resolution now. The challenge is moving beyond race and using this information to help us in terms of understanding disparities. If we look across the United States, the proportion of ancestry varies across different communities, different communities of color. Now, this is important because what this says is that local history and local experiences matter much, much more than just this proxy called race. You know, you look at New Orleans, 22% European ancestry. You look the Gullah Sea Islands off the coast of South Carolina, 3.5% European ancestry. You look all the way across to Seattle on the West Coast, it's 35%. All of those are African American communities. All of them have different proportions of ancestry because of the local experiences, and that really shapes not only the biology but the health of those communities. So when we talk about disparities, we talk about influencing factors, gene environment, gene interactions, discrimination, perceived racism, something that I think we really need to explore more is this issue of racism and how stress, the physiological response to stress in the body and how that impacts our overall health. Allostatic load, life course selection, cultural factors, behavioral differences, and SES and institutional arrangements. I lived here in Chicago for a while, and one of the biggest institutional arrangements I saw that impacted health was the lack of adequate quality food choice options in various communities. What we call food deserts, not dessert, desert, you know, where there's the lack of quality food access. So anyway, that's an institutional arrangement. I will end with this. This is you know, we talk about genetics and disparities, genetics and disease, but I think this proves sort of how little genetics impacts this disparity called hypertension. This is a study by Charles Rotimi and Richard Cooper they did at Loyola back in 97, where they looked at populations of African descent. So all of these populations share a similar genetic background. Nigeria, Cameroon, and West Africa. You notice, you see there on the x-axis is BMI, body mass index. Those populations are lean, but their percent of hypertension in those populations are lower than about 16-17%. We move out into the Caribbean, populations are getting bigger. So does the prevalence of hypertension. We go out to Maywood, which is a suburb here outside of Illinois. Folks are a lot bigger, and the prevalence of hypertension is really high. So we see that in terms of shared genetic background, but different environments, right? We see that, what do we know about those populations? We know that not only is there a difference in diet, there's a lot less fat diet, but there's a different sort of lifestyle. You know, we drive Cadillac Escalades, we go to Wendy drive-thrus, we take escalators up one flight of stairs. In West Africa, folks are riding bikes and walking, okay? They do have a couple of Cadillac Escalades, but not a lot out there like we do here. And so we have to think about that. You know, one of the things that a friend of mine told me is that if we walked a mile a day, just a mile a day, I mean, we could reduce our risk, our blood pressure drastically just walking a mile a day and cutting our salt intake, no matter what ethnicity you are, okay? So I think that there are certain things that we really have to think about when we are trying to sort of this public health impact as it relates to disparities. And I'll end there. Thank you very much.